My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER, promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. All right, glad you're with us on this Tuesday. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to join us. We're going to make a stop today at some point with the governor of Iowa, the governor of Nebraska. I don't know if you're following the story of the devastation and the flooding that's been going on there. It's devastating. I'll never forget. I was years ago, I was taking my kids to a tournament on a plane. It's in Omaha, and I remember flying over what it just never ended, miles and miles and miles and miles of homes submerged in water, and the devastation that took place back then. It has now happened again, and many states are impacted by this, and if your state happens to be impacted by it, our thoughts and prayers go out to you. I know it's difficult. You know, it's the hardest thing when you think about it. You work so hard in your life to build up enough money, save enough money. You know, you don't go out to dinner. You don't buy the new car. You work an extra job. You want to get the down payment. You want to get the house. Hopefully that turns out to be a great investment, usually people's biggest investment in life. And then in comes some natural, you know, disaster. In this case, massive flooding or, you know, Oklahoma. I'll never forget where, you know, Oklahoma hammered by these tornadoes or Katrina or, you know, what happened to Houston and hurricanes. I mean, I know we're not supposed to in life be so connected to our stuff or our things. And yeah, you can always rebuild it. And most people, I would hope, have insurance. But when it happens, it's like, oh, well, there you go, your family pictures. And there goes, you know, my dad gave me that. My grandfather gave me that. And people lose so much, and it happens a lot. And the one thing I'll say is we're thinking about our friends in the Midwest and what they're going through. And our thoughts and prayers obviously go out to them today. We'll check in with the governor of Iowa, the governor of Nebraska, coming up later in the program today. I bet the Democratic Radical Extreme Socialist Party is not going to be happy with this Washington Examiner piece out today, because it looks like the Democratic Party's new rock star, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is apparently not quite cutting it with voters even in her home state of liberal New York. In fact, her popularity deficit is so bad in New York that even in what is a huge Trump-stating state like New York, and Democrats outnumber Republicans, well, 2-1 in the state. In the city of New York, forget it, it's like 9-1. Trump has a better approval rating than Ocasio-Cortez. Trump had the backing of 36% of the people surveyed, compared to Ocasio-Cortez's 31%. Wow, I thought we're all socialists now. Isn't what the press is now trying to convince us? We're all socialists. Every American is a socialist. You know, a big problem, and we're going to dig into the 2020 candidates here in a second, or Hannity Watch on 2020 candidates. You have now nearly 3 out of 4 Americans saying that the Trump economy is booming. How could you say anything other than that when you break record after record after record? I won't chronicle them now. We've done it too many times. How do you get to the point where you think of anything else? Anyway, this voter survey from fake news CNN. Oh, By the way, they oversampled Democrats. 32% Democrats sampled, 25% Republicans, independents of 44%. Anyway, which could foreshadow something that is building towards 2020, and that is that 75%, three out of four Americans now say the Trump economy is booming. So if anything, the approval rating for the Trump economy is actually significantly higher than what fake news CNN says. Americans give the nation's economy glowing reviews in a CNN poll, and Donald Trump's approval rating may be reaping the benefits. Overall, 71% of the nation's of the nation see the economy is in good shape, the highest share to say, you know, so to say so since 2001 in February, and the best rating during Trump's presidency by 2 points. A majority of those respondents give the president positive reviews for his handling of the nation's economy, and his overall approval rating ticked up in their poll, 42%. Most polls, he's up at 49 and 50, but they don't want him to be too happy as a result of this. I think one of the biggest developments, the most important developments towards America's future prosperity and growth, and one that'll impact the American people, the forgotten men and women the most. Now, this comes to us through Hellenic Shipping News. And what they've concluded is the U.S. now has, and I've been telling you in different ways, the world's leading oil producer for the first time in 70 years. America is now about to become the world's number one oil exporter. And do you not realize the impact that this is going to have on the global economy? For so many years on this program, we have spent time going over and over the amount of energy resources that we were too stupid to tap into. But by ending the burdensome regulations and bureaucracy, Donald Trump single-handedly has created this environment where we are now not only energy independent, but now we are going to be the world's number one oil exporter. We're not even talking about the natural gas resources that are similarly available to us. And it goes on to say, the U.S. is set to drive global oil supply growth over the next 5 years, adding another 4 million barrels per day to the country's already booming output. And the Paris-based International Energy Agency notes that the U.S. became the world's top oil producer in 2018. They're now set to become the world's biggest oil exporter over the next 5 years, surpassing Russia and even Saudi Arabia as an exporter. Now, so many different aspects to this. Factor number one, why does that benefit the U.S.? Well, and first, it's ironic because at that very moment, your radical, extreme Democratic Socialist Party wants to eliminate oil and gas in 10 years. So this happens for the first time in 70 years. We've always had between oil, natural gas, clean burning coal, we've always had more energy under our feet than the entire Middle East combined. It's a matter of getting rid of government regulations that now allow these companies to tap into this natural resource. And when you think of all the oil countries in the Middle East, most of whom hate our guts and we've been dependent on, and how rich they've become, why do we think that we wouldn't become as rich as they became over the years? You know, and this is where, and it's not a trickle down effect. This is a reality. To extract this oil and to extract this natural gas is going to take massive amounts of manpower. If you remember the Balkans back a few years ago when we were aligning ourselves on this program with some of these oil companies and putting people that need new jobs, a better trajectory in their life, a new career, putting them together with these companies, what do we find? People that were making $25,000, $30,000, $35,000 a year, well, they'd go up to North Dakota, they'd go to Oklahoma or Texas, they get trained in one job or another. For example, I'll just use the example of truck drivers, and they train them how to drive the truck with the energy inside it. And then after their training, if they work some overtime, they were all making 100 plus grand a year. Well, that's just that is like the lowest level. Now we have two pipelines, the Keystone Pipeline, the North Dakota XL Pipeline. Then we opened up ANWR, and we have a lot of oil in the 48 states, natural gas everywhere. I mean, we are the world's biggest resource of clean burning natural gas. This literally what this is saying is millions of Americans will now have the ability to have a new enriched life, one that they never dreamed of. And that is, these jobs will become high paying career jobs for Americans that will drastically alter their life for the better. These, in other words, the trajectory of their lives will shift forever, because the number of skilled employees that they are going to need to extract this oil and gas is going to be massive. And these companies are going to be willing to train people. And as long as you don't have some self-imposed limitation in your life that holds you to a specific geographic location, if you are willing to move, you're going to get starting that $100,000 salary. You are going to get the training. You are going to be able to afford that house you've been dreaming of. You're going to be able to afford the new truck or car you've been dreaming of. You're going to be able to afford the family vacations that you've never been able to afford before. You're going to be able to alter your lifestyle dramatically. And this is an opportunity for all Americans. Nobody ever talks about it. And, you know, I screamed about this for years because this is the right thing to do. By the way, new poll out too shows 50% of Americans now see Mueller and what he's doing as a witch hunt. 71% of Americans say the economy is doing well. Majority credit Trump. Trump has been able to re-up his efforts to eliminate PBS, NPR, and federal funding. Problem with that is we have too many weak Republicans that don't have the backbone that will support him, just like on the emergency declaration. And, you know, to see fake news CNN saying 7 in 10 Americans see the economy is in good shape. The single biggest economic wealth-producing boom this country will see in modern times will be an energy boom. And that is that we go from, we know, to think of the national security side of this. We don't need to suck up or involve ourselves in the foreign affairs of people that hate America's guts any longer. That America would have the opportunity to also make the world a safer place. For example, our European allies that are dependent on Putin. What if Putin, well, he just shut down freedom of speech and quote, if he deems something fake news, I guess you're going to jail in Russia. The hostile regime, the hostile actor that he is. Well, if he turns off the spigot to Germany or anybody in Western Europe, they're screwed. Not if they have America producing enough oil, gas, and energy, the lifeblood of every economy, and we now develop the means to get our product, you know, cross the pond and into the countries that need our energy, because we have it all. And you're going to see Americans that maybe had dead-end jobs and not paying well, you're going to see that futures will begin to open up for them and their families that maybe they hadn't even dreamed of in a long time. That's the answer. That's, you know, why we never did this before is beyond any comprehension that I have in my life. It is so dumb and stupid. And it's happening simultaneously while everyone wants to get rid of oil, gas, the combustion engine, airplanes, and cows. And if that wins the day, it's over. Then forget it. We're dependent on everybody. You know, we'd have to, you know, literally put wind farms all throughout the state of California and the state of Washington and the state of Oregon. And I still don't think it'll work. Hey, if you're one of 34 million Americans that smokes, you know what a hassle it can be. For me, I'm out playing golf and I come back smelling like cigars. It's the smell on your hands and your breath, your clothes. But now, thanks to Juul, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Juul is a vaporizer. It does contain nicotine for a satisfying transition. Now, when I found Juul, it was a complete game changer in my life. I don't smoke any cigars any longer, and Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to whatever it is you're smoking. So if you're one of 34 million adults who do smoke cigars, cigarettes, pipe, whatever, well, there is an alternative to all of them. Now, to discover the smoking alternative that's like nothing you've ever tried, just visit juul.com/switchamerica. That's juul.com/switchamerica. Now, warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is addictive. All right, every day that these 2020 Democratic extreme socialist candidates come out, it just gets worse for them every day. Almost all of them supporting the new Green Deal. Eliminate cars, eliminate oil, eliminate gas. And you're going to have a government takeover of the healthcare industry completely. You can't buy your own private insurance. You're also going to have a takeover of the energy industry. And good luck to America, considering that's the lifeblood of the economy. And eventually planes and cows, they've got to go too. Meatless Mondays we now have in New York public schools, thanks to Comrade Bill de Blasio. Apparently was in New Hampshire or Iowa, one of them, and only six people showed up. I don't know if that's working out well for them. But think of what they're offering. They're offering to take away every bit of fear, anxiety that you have. They're now talking about pre-kindergarten daycare. They're now talking about college paid for, trade school paid for. They're talking about a guaranteed job and salary. They're now talking about minimum wages for everybody, whether you're working or not. They're talking about daycare and health care, guaranteed retirement, $94 trillion is only the tip of the iceberg. And by the way, capitalism, what has created the greatest wealth system for all people of all, wherever you happen to be in life, they're going to kill it off. These promises have been made. These policies have already failed. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. I think I mentioned on the air that 60 Minutes for this season has been trying to get me to agree to an interview with them. And, you know, basically going through every single solitary person that knows me and tell me, no, Leslie Stahl wants to be fair. She wants to be fair. And I had the experience where I did over an hour with Ted Koppel, and he works as a correspondent, you know, like with Rita Braver, and I think it's a great show, CBS Sunday Morning. I think it's one of the best shows on TV, actually, especially suited for Sunday morning. And Jane Pauley now does it. Charles Corot did it for many, many years. And so he comes over and he goes, I just want to interview you. I said, okay, fine. Of an hour interview, they used a minute and 7 seconds.
Sean Hannity's television program on Fox has a nightly audience of 2.9 million viewers.
Well, actually a little higher.
He has, from the first, promoted Donald Trump and a highly partisan agenda.
Honestly, I think liberalism has to be defeated. Socialism must be defeated in a political sense. This is not a... We don't want a revolution in this country.
What more do you want? You got the White House, you got the House, you got the Senate. Okay.
And then we have angry snowflakes, and then we've got a Democratic establishment. I say the press in this country is out to destroy this president. We have to give some credit to the American people that they're somewhat intelligent and that they know the difference between an opinion show and a news show.
Yeah.
You're cynical. Look at that.
Yeah, I'm cynical because,
You think we're bad for America? You think I'm bad for America?
Yeah.
You do?
In the long haul, I think you and all these opinion
That's
shows...
That's sad, Ted.
No, you know why?
That's sad.
Because you're very good at what you do and because you have attracted a significantly more influential...
You are selling the American people short.
Let me finish the sentence before you do that.
With all due respect.
You have attracted people who are determined that ideology is more important than facts.
Now, that in and of itself is a lie, that I've attracted people that say ideology is more important than lies. The problem with the interview, and where my beef with edited fake news like this interview, is that I said, I gave him an answer. So he asked me to let him finish. I let him finish. I answer that point he makes, and that doesn't make air. Now, that's the problem with doing one of these, you know, edited interviews with people. You do an edit, you know, and then it becomes fake news, you know, edited style. And so, you know, so now I'm putting myself in a position. I asked some of my friends, would you do 60 Minutes? They're all laughing at me. They said, Hannity, are you out of your mind? It's never going to come out fair. It's never going to be good. They're going to edit it to death. They're going to wait till you say something that they think that they can jump on. All they're going to want to do is talk about you and what is this mysterious relationship you have with the president that has been written about and the subject of so much speculation of, you know what? I'm never telling anybody what my relationship with anybody is. You know, I've explained over and over again, what does it mean to be a talk show host? Well, as a talk show host, you wear many hats. Sure, you could say I'm an opinion journalist, an advocacy journalist. You could say all sorts of things. But I can also produce hours of radio and TV coverage where we do straight up news, breaking news story. Maybe it's some horrible event at a school. Maybe it's, God forbid, a school shooting, or maybe some type of a natural disaster, or maybe a time of war or whatever. You know, we can chronicle hours and hours of this show, radio and TV, of me just doing straight reporting. That's part of being a talk show host. We do investigative reporting for 2 years now. We have been investigating the deep state. We have been able to break more stories that have been ignored by the mainstream leftist liberal media that hates Trump, and as they have been fixated on a false narrative and lie without any evidence and any proof, we have been able to, you know, see, oh, look what we got. They rigged the criminal investigation into Hillary Clinton because she was their favored candidate. Oh, they wrote an exoneration before an investigation, before they ever interviewed her. Oh, and when they did interview her, they allowed two other people in the room, which is highly inappropriate. And they changed the legal standard from gross negligence to extreme carelessness. And now we learn that the former attorney general under Obama, Loretta Lynch, was up to her eyeballs in making every decision into the criminal investigation into Hillary Clinton, that she said it's not an investigation. It's a matter. After she met Bill Clinton on the tarmac in Phoenix at an FBO days before the decision was coming down, and I'm sure they were talking about their grandchildren. And then immediately thereafter, the same players that said, oh, Trump is a loathsome human being, and the people that vote for them, they can smell because they're smelly Walmart people. Well, the ones that gave her the free pass, even though the general counsel at the FBI under James Comey thought she should be indicted for the Espionage Act, they immediately began what became a 9-month FBI witch hunt into Trump-Russia collusion, which came up empty, and that's before the appointment of Mueller. Just like the House Intel Committee Chair, Devin Nunes, came up with nothing. And they investigate. They saw all the documents the same as Mueller. Same with the Senate Committee under North Carolina Senator Burr. Same conclusion. And it's amazing that the very people that think that the influence or Russian influence on our 2016 election is so important that we've got to get to the bottom of it. Well, now that we know that Hillary, having been set free because of those that rigged her investigation, any other American would have been indicted for violations of the Espionage Act. You delete 33,000 emails, you kill your hard drives and your devices after they've been subpoenaed. I guarantee you're not going to get away with what she got away with. So they let all of that happen. And then she unleashes, you know, all of this money that she funnels through a law firm and hires an op research group and hires a foreign national. And we now learned in just the last week and a half, everybody was warned that Christopher Steele hated Trump, that his sources were beyond dubious, nobody verified or corroborated them, and that Hillary paid for most of it, or the money she was controlling through the DNC at the time. You know, all of that happened. Now, what did they do with the dossier? Well, they spread it like wildfire, we learned. You know, what, 12 different news agencies, different reporters, and it was disseminated in, to the American people so that maybe many Americans actually believe there were two hookers in a Moscow Ritz-Carlton, Donald Trump's room at the time, and they were urinating in his bed. And some people believe that, probably didn't vote for Trump because of that. Well, that's election interference, using bought and paid for Russian lies. How does that not become a part of the Mueller investigation? And then that same dirty Russian dossier that she paid for is then used for, you know, FISA warrants against the Trump campaign associate, which brings them right into the inner workings of an opposition party candidate, Donald Trump, in the middle of a presidential election year. Well, that's Russian interference, too, that they paid for. There's no interest with Mueller and his merry band of Democratic donors, or Andrew Weissman, the pit bull, or Jeannie Ray, who actually worked for Clinton. Couldn't find one single Republican donor, not one, for the Mueller investigation. And the news ignores all of it. These are unbelievable times we're living in. And then after the election, we now know what the insurance policy was. To bludgeon Trump with this fake narrative that they themselves built. And that's becoming more clear every day. You know, the fact that Comey signed off on the first FISA warrant in October of 2016, he couldn't have verified it because Christopher Steele never verified it. As a matter of fact, he distanced himself as far as he could when he was put under oath in Great Britain in an interrogatory. And now I'm waiting for the Christopher Steele depositions to be released, because that's going to be really enlightening. And I can't wait that when the FISA applications are finally released, as Nunes's committee has said, as the Grassley-Graham memo has said, the bulk of information for the FISA applications, you know, came from the bought and paid for Russian dossier. And Andrew McCabe, then deputy director at the FBI, said no dossier, no warrants. And then they took it even further than that. Now we've been through 600 and some odd days, even though after 9 months of investigations by the FBI before Mueller was even appointed, they came up with nothing. And look at what they're doing to the country in the meantime. How does anyone, you know, the president's recently been saying this can't happen again to another president. And maybe he's uniquely qualified that he has the ability to compartmentalize it away and still keep his promises. But the amount of time, effort, energy, and distraction is unprecedented for nothing. And then when you have real collusion at the exact same time, how frustrating could that be? Now, what's interesting is Ted Koppel. Now, before he did his little hit job on me like he did the last time, I kind of like Ted Koppel a little bit. I mean, I've done interviews with him before over the years, and I thought he'd at least attempt to be fair. He wasn't. And I called it edited fake news. Anyway, Koppel's now saying the New York Times, Washington Post decided that Trump is just bad for the U.S. All right. Actually, a little truth from the mainstream media. And he said that he feels the New York Times, Washington Post have both decided as organizations that Trump is bad for America. And I'm terribly concerned that when you talk about the New York Times these days, when you talk about the Washington Post these days, we're not talking about the New York Times of 50 years ago. We're not talking about the Washington Post of 50 years ago. And he said this at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He said, what we're talking about are organizations that I believe have, in fact, decided as organizations that Donald J. Trump is bad for the United States. You know, we have things appearing on the front page of the New York Times right now that never would have appeared 50 years ago. Explaining that analysis commentary didn't used to appear on the front page, but times have changed. No, it's funny because I'm upfront about what I, who I am and what I do. Just to finish my thought, I can produce hours upon hours of radio and TV just straight reporting on big events that are unfolding. Look at what we did in 2007 and 8, vetting Obama, Frank Marshall Davis, Alinsky, Acorn, community organizing, the Church of GD America, starting his political career in the home of unrepentant domestic terrorists. The media wouldn't touch this. The question about Ayers and Dorn got asked once in the mainstream media because I fed the day before George Stephanopoulos with the question. Nobody in the mainstream media, after 8 years of Obama's rigid ideological presidency, which I predicted, well, it resulted in horrible statistics, which I predicted also. I wish it didn't. And that Trump would govern as a conservative. Said that. Do I also give opinion? Yeah, I give opinion. So we do straight news, investigative reporting. We give opinion. Sometimes we do sports and cultural issues. But if you open up a newspaper, that's pretty much what you get in every newspaper. We just take on all of those jobs. And we're upfront about who we are when we're giving opinion. And you got to give people credit. Now, these other news organizations, they say that they're fair and objective and balanced, etc. They're not. They're anything but fair, objective, and balanced. You know, if they were, do you think they might vet Beto Bozo O'Rourke and his weird fantasies that I told you about yesterday? You know, or this, how about Reuters holding back this story about Beto's renegade online hacking years? They held it back for 2 years until after his race with Ted Cruz. Would they do that to Trump? The reporter for Reuters, Joseph Mann. So you got the mainstream media, Democrats working hand in hand together to win elections. And people like Mann and Reuters, you know, how do they expect us to take anything they put out there seriously? Or look at their rush to judgment on the BuzzFeed fake news embarrassment, or their condemnation of the Covington, you know, high school kids, Nicholas Sandman, or their desire to believe Jussie Smollett without asking just a few basic fundamental questions. You know, O'Rourke, and it, you know, he's part of the cult of the dead cow, fantasizing, putting his foot on the accelerator to kill two kids with his car. Okay, yeah, I'll admit he's young, but it's a little creepy to me. But every one of these Democratic, radical, extremist, socialist Democrats, they're all basically on the same page. They have a vision for America. No oil, no gas. No combustion engine, no cows, no airplanes. And we're going to build high-speed trains. I can't wait to take the sailboat over to Europe the next time we have a trip. I'll see you in a month or maybe longer. Good luck visiting New Zealand or Australia or Asia. All right, 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. When we come back, Newt Gingrich is going to join us on all of this. All right, glad you're with us. Hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, excuse me. This just in, the Supreme Court has now handed the president a huge victory on border security, hopefully a harbinger of victories to come, as the Supreme Court today endorsed the U.S. government's authority to detain immigrants awaiting deportation anytime, even years after they have completed prison terms for criminal convictions. Now, the decision handed the president a victory as he pursues his border security agenda. Writing for the majority, Sam Alito said that it is not the court's job to impose a time limit for when immigrants can be detained after serving a prison sentence. And he noted that the court has previously said that an official's crucial duties are better carried out late than never. And he said the challenger's assertion that immigrants had to be detained within 24 hours ending their prison sentence was especially hard to swallow. It was a 5-4 vote. Conservative justices also were in the majority in June when the court upheld a 5-4 vote on Trump's travel ban targeting people from countries that have a population of extremists. Other stats today, Even fake news CNN, 7 in 10 Americans say the economy is in good shape. Interesting. Well, the liberals are mad today that Trump donated $100,000 to the Department of Homeland Security. Half of Americans now agree that Mueller's investigation has become a witch hunt. The biggest accomplishment, by the way, of the president is the deregulation. And then I gave you the numbers before that, in fact, America has now set to become the world's largest oil exporter. Paris-based International Energy Agency notes that the U.S. has become the world's top oil producer in 2018 and is now set to become the world's biggest oil exporter over the next 5 years, surpassing Russia and even Saudi Arabia as an exporter. Former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich is with us. You know, you don't hear, if you turn on the news a lot, about the president's successes, and there are an awful lot of them. You chronicle them in your book. How are you?
Well, I'm great, and I think if you'll notice that maybe I'm too optimistic. You know, I always have this trait.
But here we go, by the way. I'm being set up here. Go ahead.
No. I'm just beginning to think, based on a couple of talks I had with reporters today and your CNN report just now, maybe the dam is beginning to break. Maybe the facts are so overwhelming that even the hardcore news media is a little shaken that their version didn't work. And, of course, you just had, as you pointed out, two historic Supreme Court decisions. Remember, the Hillary Clinton one, those would both have been 7-3 or 7-2 on the other side.
Did you hear what Ted Koppel said? He actually went on to say that he said that the New York Times and Washington Post have both decided as organizations that President Trump is bad for America. He goes on, I'm terribly concerned when you talk about the New York Times these days, when you talk about the Washington Post these days. We're not talking about the Times of 50 years ago or the Post 50 years ago. He said, we are talking about organizations that I believe have, in fact, decided as organizations that Donald Trump is bad for America. Pretty accurate.
Well, that's another great example, though. Here is one of the most respected newsmen of his generation coming down.
Well, I'm still pissed off at him, but go ahead.
Judgment.
Well, he sandbagged me. I do an hour interview with him, and he uses a minute and 7 seconds to make himself look good. But anyway, that's edited fake news.
Yeah, you're right. No. Look, I am not going to defend Ted Koppel sandbagging you. It was probably a bad week. He needed to feel good. What can I tell you? But I think it's interesting.
Beat up Hannity.
Even a guy like Ted Koppel feels that he needs to speak out. You're just sensing that the solid wall that condemned Trump is beginning to have leaks in it. The economy is a big piece of that. But also, I had a conversation with a reporter today about the Mueller report, in which, and this was a pretty liberal reporter for a pretty liberal paper, who just sort of said, well, gosh, if it really doesn't show anything, doesn't that kind of indicate the president? And I mean, this is not a reporter who a year ago could have said those words.
So look at what happened with Beto O'Rourke. You want to talk about media bias or the what are you laughing about?
I'm sorry.
Robert Francis Beto, I call him Bozo O'Rourke.
I always talk about Robert Francis O'Rourke, but my newsletter tomorrow is entitled Bye Bye Beto.
He's in deep trouble. But the reporter entered into agreement with Bozo to delay a story about him being part of a hacking group, the cult of the dead cow, until after he ran against Ted Cruz. He held it for 2 years.
Right. Look, Beto O'Rourke is, or Robert Francis O'Rourke, to use his real name, is the Kardashian version of the Kennedys. So think about whatever the Kennedys once were in a mythical time, this guy is a shallow, narcissistic irrelevancy who is propped up by the support of a whole bunch of people who look at him and go, oh, my God, he actually waves his arms. I mean, did you see him wave his arms?
Oh, he waves them.
He waves his arms so well. You know, and you have to say to yourself, I mean, this is a guy whose supporters have got to be genuinely dumb.
Well,
he's dumb. They've got to be dumb.
So here's what's emerging with the 2020 candidates, and I'll ask a question about Joe Biden separately. But you have now, even during the birth process, abortion. In other words, as labor has begun, right, you're still allowed to have an abortion. We heard the comments of the governor of Virginia. Well, first we'll deliver the baby and we'll make the baby comfortable. And then the mother will decide whether or not medical attention will be given the baby, which is nothing right short of infanticide and murder, but put that aside. But they're also the party that is serious. There's 100 congressmen, senators combined that agree with the new Green Deal to eliminate gas, oil. And we're on the verge of the biggest wealth-producing breakthrough this country has ever had with what I just pointed out about gas and oil. And we'll eliminate that, the lifeblood of our economy and the combustion engine. And while we're at it, we'll get rid of cars and cows and planes, and we'll give everybody everything for free, and we'll tax corporations at 90% and individuals at least 70%, and then we'll have a wealth tax on top of that.
Right.
How does that work?
Well, of course it doesn't work. It works like Venezuela. It works like Zimbabwe. It works like Cuba. I mean, anybody who has lived and looked around at socialism on the planet realizes socialism is power to the government, leads to corruption, ends up depriving everybody except the elite of everything, and is sustained in power, as in Venezuela right this minute, only because the military is the one group that gets goodies. Nobody else in Venezuela gets anything. But Maduro makes sure the military is taken care of because they're the only people left to keep him in power. So when you watch these people talk about glibly being socialist, just realize these are people who refuse, absolutely refuse, to deal with reality. And they're living a fantasy land, and they want you to join them in their fantasies.
So the people that I talk to, this seems to be, although Bernie is leading in a couple of polls over Joe Biden by a pretty significant margin, but people say, well, Joe Biden probably would be the front runner. And I'm looking at, I don't really necessarily agree with that. Joe Biden is a gaffe machine. He'd first have to run on the failed record of him and Obama, which was a disaster. And I think the comparisons will be so stark that he's going to have a lot of a hard time defending that. And then you think of, well, I come from a slave state, and you think of the other gaffes that, well, you can't work at a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight.
You can't go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. It's a fully, I'm not joking.
You got the first sort of mainstream African American who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook.
And you don't know my state. My state was a slave state. My state is a border state. My state is the eighth largest black population in the country. My state is anything from a northeast liberal state.
Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you all back in chains.
Can you believe storybook, man? I mean, here you have the first African-American that's articulate and clean. But on top of that, then you've got 8 years of a track record. I don't know if America, I think, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, will be a pretty powerful line if it's Joe Biden.
I've known Joe Biden for a very long time. And Joe Biden is always a good candidate as long as he doesn't run. And I think that he will be a terrific candidate if he doesn't run. And every time he starts to run, he makes no sense.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, if you listen to him for a little while, his facts are wrong, his syntax is terrible, and his logic is just irrational. And that's why the only two times he's run, he collapsed as a candidate. And I think that, frankly, if he runs this time, he'll collapse. He will not be relevant by, February of next year.
What do you think about where Mueller is now going? And more importantly, you know, we have been now peeling away the onion these 2 years, and we now know that Clinton bought and paid for dossier after they rigged an investigation to not charge somebody that should have been charged, Hillary Clinton. She was the favored candidate. And then that she buys this dossier. The dossier is disseminated to the American people as Russian lies to impact the 2016 election. Then it's even used to obtain a FISA warrant against the Trump campaign associates so they can spy on an opposition party candidate in the lead up to an election. And now we're finding out that it was used, the same unverified, uncorroborated, Clinton paid for Russian lies were used to bludgeon Trump. And it's the exact opposite of what we've been told by the media. And now all the proof is coming out as they begin to reveal these closed door sessions and testimony.
Well, look, all I can say, because I have no secret inside information, watching all of his big guns leave quietly, watching the way the news media, who have pretty good sources, are beginning to get more timid, I'm beginning to think that this report may be an amazing vindication of Trump and may be the most devastating thing ever to happen to the House Democrats, because it may make it clear to the country that any effort to go beyond Mueller is pure, vicious partisanship with no public purpose to it. And I have to tell you, you and I know, because we talked about this for months, if you had said to me 6 months ago that we'd be at this stage and you'd be having this kind of leaving the stage with a whimper rather than a bang, I don't know that I'd have believed it.
Well, what about the 6 to 8 Democratic committees that have now committed themselves for the next 2 years, not serving the American people, but endless investigations? How does that work for them?
Well, look, I think that Mueller, in fact, may make them an embarrassment and may give Trump the perfect bludgeon to say again and again to the country, look, this guy spent millions of dollars. He brought in the best Democratic lawyers he could find. He had the full power of the federal government. He couldn't find anything because there isn't anything. And I think that may well work to totally discredit the House Democrats in their effort to engage in this kind of investigation.
Well, it's going to be interesting. So who do you think, if you had to guess today, who do the Democrats nominate to be their candidate this year?
Look, I'm sticking with this on your show for week after week. I believe Kamala Harris will be the nominee. I believe that if you're an African-American woman from California, being from California lets you automatically be crazy, and that takes care of the left wing. She can raise a huge amount of money. Being an African-American woman gives her huge advantages in the primary, and I don't see who's going to knock her out. I mean, you know, the one person, if Sanders actually can go the distance, he might get the nomination. That would truly be astonishing. But remember,
but even Kamala buys into this new Green Deal insanity. I don't see the American people buying this.
Look, they're not going. You didn't ask me who I thought would win the general. Trump will win the general. But you asked about the Democratic Party nomination, and being crazy in the Democratic Party right now is just a sign that you're a good, loyal Democrat. So I think Kamala Harris is adequately crazy by virtue of being from California, and I think that in the end, if you think about it, while Sanders has a pretty good vote, I think he's about like 28-29%, this is a guy who has 100% name ID, ran before for president, and is probably at his peak. Well, in the end, somebody's got to get to 51. I mean, the thing that happened with Trump is he kept day by day eliminating his opponents, and one morning he was above 50 in the Republican primaries. And I think she is more likely to get there than I think Sanders or Biden.
All right, Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House, thanks for being with us. Don't forget to download his new podcast every Sunday.
Certainly by now, people across the nation have seen the devastating and catastrophic flooding that's moving across our region. After having the opportunity to tour Western Iowa on Sunday and yesterday, I can tell you that from Hornick to Hamburg, I saw firsthand Iowans coming together, not only for each other, but for their communities. I can also tell you they're still in the battle, but their resolve is strong. I have seen and heard stories of heroic volunteerism at each stop, We were invited into damaged homes of Iowans as they were fighting back emotions from the destruction. But I tell you, they were still full of pride and their intention for tomorrow. I sat with the people in Hamburg who have lost two-thirds of their town to floodwaters. Their water and sewer facilities have been compromised, and the destruction to the ag community just in that small area alone is devastating. We laid everything out. They talked about what they were facing, and in their next response, I heard him say, they've not lost their fight, and they don't know how to give up.
All right, that is the governor of Iowa, Kim Reynolds, talking about the devastation. Now, this is all throughout the Midwest in America, and the amount of damage, record floods, unprecedented damage and difficulty that the people of Iowa are facing, and what happens next. Governor, I know I speak on behalf of everybody on this program. We're really sorry about all you've been through, and tell us what the latest is.
Oh, thanks, Sean. I really appreciate that, and appreciate you really helping us bring awareness of the catastrophic situation that we're dealing with, not only in Iowa, but my good friend to the west, Governor Ricketts, in Nebraska. Is just, it's heart-wrenching. It's horrific when you see it. Look, when I did the flyover yesterday morning along the Missouri, I mean, it looked like an ocean, and to see, you know, generational farms that were overtopped, to think about communities where I sat down with the mayor and hear that two-thirds of your community, your city has been wiped out. We have sewer and water treatment facilities that have been compromised. It's just, it's almost overwhelming, but at every community that I was in, the first responders, the emergency managers, the teamwork and coordination, and they all said this, from federal to state to local, has been phenomenal. And we didn't have a lot of time with this one, so we had to react really, really quickly, and just getting people evacuated. We had communities that access has been cut off, and we had communities doing rescue efforts from a boat, and you know, it goes on and on, and we're just getting started. We're in this for the long haul.
Let me ask you this, Governor. What is I know you were pretty successful in the evacuation. What is the long-term damage in all of this?
Well, we're still assessing that right now, but it is going to be just significant. And I appreciate, you know, the president's response to this. He has, I've talked to his representatives at the White House. I had a call yesterday from Secretary Sonny Perdue. The agricultural impact alone, we have bin after bin after bin that is full of grain, and elevators that have a lot of grain that's lost. We have livestock that's been lost. We have just tremendous infrastructure problems, not only with our main interstates and highways, but a lot of secondary roads that are going to be impacted. I've had a call from Administrator Linda McMahon, so we can talk about, you know, we have to put a strategy in place. We have to see what we can do immediately. Then we have to have a long-term plan as well. But just them reaching out to me that say, we're aware of the situation, we know what's going on. I'd received information from the Small Business Administrator McMahon this morning about how we can access grants and funding to help relocate businesses and get people back in their homes. I talked to Secretary Chow this morning as well. There's an opportunity for us to access some early release of emergency funding from U.S. DOT. Federal Highway Administration, to get the infrastructure up and going so we can move commerce in and out of the state. And so it's just, and then I pulled all of my cabinet members together too, so that we're seamlessly looking for ways that we can respond and get the damage assessments done so that we can get the information to the different areas to help pool the resources and really start to rebuild and recover.
Well, I know the president tweeted out that his team is staying in very close contact with you. And also local officials managing the floods and supporting the first responders. And long term, you're going to need some support, which, by the way, you know, the American people are the most generous on earth. I'm sure that whatever is needed, they'll step up and help their fellow Americans out when needed.
And you just see it over and over, the sense of community. I don't know if I said this. I tell you, we've just been, I've been going 24/7, but we have Vice President Pence that's going to be in today. I'm meeting him and Governor Ricketts in Omaha. We're going to do a flyover. You really need to see it to really get a sense of how, you know, the amount of flooding. It looked like an ocean as I drove over it on Sunday. So, I mean, it's just, I can't thank the outreach and just the willingness to say we stand ready, you know, to help wherever we can and to help expedite the process. And that's so important because, you know, as we tend to look at government and bureaucracy and red tape, we're going to have to figure out how to be innovative and quick in coordinating resources to get this done, to really start the recovery process. So I'm so,
grateful. How do you expect this is going to impact potentially some of the farmland in Iowa, which we as a country rely on so much?
Yeah, I'm really nervous about, I mean, we're resilient, we'll come back, but just the fact that, you know, we've got corn that's gone, that this is when they'd be moving it to market, and a lot of that isn't insured, and it's just how it goes, so we've got an issue there. We got to get rid of the water and get the fields back in shape. We have to make sure the roads are okay so that we can start to plant for the new season. You know, that's an issue. A couple of my farmers down in one of our small counties in southwest Iowa said, this is just tentative. So this is one person that's talking about that area, 390,000 bushels of soybeans, over 1 million bushels of corn that have been impacted, and we're still assessing it. So, but you know what? We've got some of the best farmers in the entire world. We take very seriously our role in feeding and fueling the world, and we're doing more on less, and with technology and innovation, we're going to get the sand out of the fields. We're going to rebuild. We're going to be ready to go. You know, we just have to. That's why we've started recovery today. I mean, we have to be sure that we're doing everything we can, that when they get ready to get in the field and to get the, you know, start the new season, that we can get them there, that the roads are ready to go, and that, you know, and the fields are ready to go. And so that's a lot of what we're working on. And then also just in our communities, getting people back into housing and getting our businesses relocated so that we can not lose that commerce in these small communities across, you know, across the western side of the state.
Well, I know the president, the vice president, they'll be all over it, and I'm sure emergency funding will be appropriated as it should be. So I just want you to know the rest of the country is, you know, you're in our thoughts and prayers. We wish you the best, and so sorry this happened. I know how traumatic it can be for people. They're losing everything, their farms, their homes, and things may seem bleak now, but these waters will recede and life will go on. And until then, Americans stand by ready to help.
Thank you. And we're resilient. We are Iowans. We are tough.
That's true.
Thank you, Sean.
All right.
Well,
you know, we New Yorkers are kind of tough, too, but we care about our friends in Iowa. OK,
deal.
Just sending our love and prayers.
Thank you so much for calling. Thank you.
I
appreciate it.
All right, Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa. We're now joined by Governor Pete Ricketts of Nebraska, and he's here to talk about the tragedies caused by the floods there. You know, the last time Omaha got flooded, it just so happens that I was flying into Omaha. My kids were younger. They had a tennis tournament, and I was stunned at just the magnitude of the floods then. And from what I understand, it's even worse than it was at that time.
Yeah, it is. You know, just to put this in perspective, in 2011, when we had the flooding that was so damaging, we had the National Guard out to watch the levees. We didn't do any rescue operations. And in this case, we have had the National Guard rescue 111 people. The State Patrol rescued 163 people. We've had our Nebraska Task Force 1 rescue 16 people. We have, in the state of Nebraska, never had a weather disaster that has been so widespread as this one has been. It literally has devastated every part of our state, from the blizzard to the flooding. We've got over two-thirds, actually almost 70% of our counties in our state have declared an emergency. 77 cities have declared an emergency. So this has displaced thousands of people. We actually still have 475 people in shelters right now while we wait for these floodwaters to go down. So this really has been the most devastating weather event that we've had in our state's history. And, you know, I was listening to Governor Reynolds before as well, but what you see is the same thing in Nebraska where the local people are stepping up. We really want to say thank you to our law enforcement, to the first responders, to the volunteers. They've been just doing a wonderful job. And I just want to give you a quick example. I was in Lynch on Saturday, small town in north central Nebraska. The fire chief there, his house had been flooded out, but he hadn't gone home as he was helping other people. The deputy sheriff, we drove past his house. It had been flooded out. His father-in-law was cleaning it out because he was out searching for our missing person. And that's what you've seen all across the state is these selfless people who are putting the community first and have been working around the clock, getting, you know, 3-4 hours of sleep at night to help make sure they keep their neighbors safe.
Well, you have a Air Force base there, including officers and hangars of, what, 3,000 feet and of the base and 11,700-foot runway, which is massive. It's underwater at this particular point?
Yeah, about a third of the base is underwater. The good news is that none of the housing has been impacted, but about 30 operational buildings have been flooded, and so that's going to take some time for that to be able to get cleaned out as well. So it's definitely impacting operations there at the base. Now, we were actually in the process of planning to move those planes to Lincoln anyway because they're going to be doing a runway repair project. But it certainly is impacting the operations at the base.
I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, my time, I actually went to Omaha many, many years when my kids were younger. They were playing national tournaments there. And I love the people of Nebraska and Omaha, and they're great people. And I know how hard they work for what they have. And this can be really devastating to them. But why does it keep happening? Because it happened the one time I was there, and now it's happening now. Is there anything that the government can do to stop this from happening?
Well, one of the things we do is we work on flood mitigation, and that's an ongoing process. I think one of the things to keep in mind is Nebraska is the state that's got the most amount of mileage of rivers and streams in the country. So it's actually one of the great things about our state is our water resources. In particular, this flood, you know, the ground was still frozen when we had that weather system move in. And so that in part is responsible for why the water just didn't really have anywhere to go. And so it's definitely one of the things that, you know, we just continue to work on to be able to do that mitigation. But man, when you have the kind of water that we had coming through our state, there's just no preparing for it. Like, this is the worst we've ever had in our state's history. And you know, the people who saw 2011 said, well, it'll never get any worse than that, were wrong by, you know, some cases up to 4 feet.
Listen, I was stunned flying over the flood the last time and the magnitude of it. I mean, it went on for miles and miles and miles. I know the federal government, I know the American people are the most generous on earth, and I know that support is on its way and help is on its way. And, you know, we just wanted to give you guys a shout out today and wish you all our best and hope that you can get this receding as quickly as possible and get back to normal life. I'm sure the damage is going to be overwhelming in the end.
Yeah, the damage is going to be huge. I mean, if you think about it, about 15% of our state highways were closed at one point, and we still have about 200 miles of damaged roads that can't be reopened until we get them repaired. We've got 14 bridges that are out at least, not counting the county bridges and the U.S. highway bridges. So it's going to be significant infrastructure. But quick story I want to share with you. I was in Fremont at the First Lutheran shelter there on Saturday, and a woman by the name of Brenda came in. Her trailer had been washed away, her trailer home, and she and her kids got in the volunteer line because she wanted to teach her kids that they could still help out. She didn't want to. And that's just the spirit of Nebraskans who are just so amazing. Just that their resilience has just been inspiring. And it's people like Brenda that are going to help us recover and make this the best place in the world to live, work, and raise a family.
All right, Governor Ricketts of Nebraska, we wish you the best. I know the American people will be watching. I know the federal government is on top of it. And we wish you a speedy recovery. And our thoughts and prayers are with everybody.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Sean. I appreciate it.
You bet. 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program? Quick break. We will come back. And when we come back, don't forget our news roundup, information overload hour, as we check in with our pollsters, John McLaughlin, Matt Towery. We'll take a look towards 2020 and the Democratic radical extreme candidates and whether or not they got a shot against Donald Trump. That and Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Straight ahead.
Coming up. up next, our final news roundup and information overload hour.
Eric Holder, the former AG, is talking about expanding the number of people in the United States Supreme Court beyond nine to get more progressives on there. Where are you on that?
I think we need to fix the Supreme Court. I think they stole a Supreme Court seat.
Can we keep it at nine? Should we keep it at nine?
I think I would like to start exploring a lot of options, and we should have a national conversation. Term limits for Supreme Court justices might be one thing. They give every president the ability to choose three. Okay. We have people holding on to those seats in ways that I don't think is necessarily healthy. So I want to figure
out... Age limit?
I think term limits might be a better way of saying that.
We get a 2% tax on the 75,000 richest families in this country. We would have enough money to provide universal child care, universal pre-K, universal pre-pre-K for every child in America and still have $2 trillion left over. Let's make it happen.
There is no such thing as an illegal human.
So are you for or against third trimester abortions?
So the question is about abortion and reproductive rights. And my answer to you is that that should be a decision that the woman makes.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour here on the Sean Hannity Show. Our Hannity Watch on the 2020 extremist candidates continues as we vet these candidates, unlike what the mainstream media will ever do. Now, you just heard from Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, and, of course, Robert Francis Beto Bozo O'Rourke. And we have some polls out today. The first Emerson College, Wisconsin poll of Democratic primary voters. Bernie Sanders leads by a comfortable margin, 39%, followed by Joe Biden at 24, Elizabeth Warren at 14, and let's see, Beto at 20, Kamala Harris at 16, and it goes on for there. What's interesting is you watch the positions that they're now taking. Almost all of these 2020 candidates have adopted the new Green Deal as part of their top agenda items. You know, you have Beto O'Rourke there answering the question, you know, about third term abortions. How this became a big issue this year kind of came out of nowhere. But now you have, what, 10 states dealing with it and the federal government and Democrats in Congress dealing with it. But when they started talking about abortion, even during the birthing process and dilation has begun, and the governor of Virginia is saying, well, first we'll deliver the baby, and after that we'll make sure the baby's comfortable, and then we'll let the mother decide whether or not the baby gets to live or die, which is infanticide. But that is the radical new extreme Democratic Socialist Party. Now, what Warren is talking about is the other big issues that they're pushing. No one's paying a lot of attention. They want to expand the Supreme Court. And the reason is that they see that by the time Donald Trump likely leaves office in 2025, they are not going to be happy at the new makeup of the court. So, well, let's just add three liberals. Let's just change the whole system. Forget the Electoral College system, which was designed specifically so big states don't get to stomp all over little states, because the smaller states obviously have different needs than, you know, states like New York and California. So that's been their big push. You have Warren bragging about this 2% tax, but she's going to provide daycare for our kids. We're going to provide, think about this, everything is free. Guaranteed job, guaranteed leave, medical leave, sick leave, whatever it happens to be. Guaranteed vacations, guaranteed retirement, guaranteed health care, but you can't get your own health care. We're going to eliminate oil, gas, the combustion engine, cows and airplanes over time, which will destroy the greatest wealth-producing economic system ever envisioned and implemented in the history of man. Elizabeth Warren insisting her career was not advanced behind because of the Native American heritage claim. Cory Booker claiming something that is not true, that he's not a socialist, when in fact he is. And I think Beto Bozo had the worst week of everybody here when you look at his record. I mean, take, for example, the latest controversy about him. We learned Friday that one of the reporters from Reuters sat on what was an embarrassing story about Beto O'Rourke's time as a renegade online hacker until after his hotly contested race with Senator Ted Cruz. Now, the Reuters reporter, who's not been fired, His name is Joseph Men, entered into an agreement with Bozo to delay the damning story so long as O'Rourke agreed to the interview. Anyway, so you got people like him. Then you got BuzzFeed and their latest embarrassment. What you're going to watch is exactly what we saw in 2007 and 2008. You're going to watch whoever the Democratic candidate is. There won't be any vetting of that candidate. There will be praise and worship and thrills up and down the legs of the extension of the Democratic Party media-wise, which is the mainstream media. You look over their policies, $94 trillion in 10 years. That's what they want to spend to remake America into the socialist utopia. Take away all your fears, false promises, socialism, redistribution, statism, call it by whatever name you want. That's what they want for the country. All right, joining us now, we bring in our pollsters, John McLaughlin and Matt Towery. Thank you both for being with us. Matt, you had an interesting piece I saw this week about something that Donald Trump should do that would help him in 2020, and that's move to Florida.
Well, hey, Sean, how are you? It's I'm retired, but I came out of retirement to write this one because I am in Florida now. And, there is a certain value that comes being a home state candidate. Florida's never had a president in the history of the country. And Trump, of course, lives here anyway, as Mar-a-Lago, as a home. I think it would give him a base. You know, one of his big complaint about states like New York is that you have the nanny state, you have the tax and spend state, that they're driving people away. And I don't see any reason that he has to continue to call that his residence. I think he could call Florida his residence, be a Florida candidate, and then branch out to these other red states like Georgia, North Carolina, all of which are sort of like Florida. They're on the bubble this time. They're not gimme states for the Republican candidate.
You know, it's funny, years ago, long before I ever ran for president, I said, why do you base yourself in New York knowing you're going to save 15 cents of every dollar if you just move to Florida or Texas? And he was a little hesitant because I guess he just happens to love New York, feels identified with New York. But, yeah, I think he'd save a lot of money. You listen to the words of Andrew Cuomo. I think they're so revealing. Jason will pull this up. Well, tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. Well, we tax the rich, and now they're leaving. And as a result, there's a $2.3 billion shortfall, and they don't know how to make it up.
We have one of the most progressive tax codes in the United States, which is a good thing, which means the richer you are, the more you pay. However, that presents a very fragile economy, because then you are relying on a very small number of people for the vast amount of your tax dollars. 1% of the taxpayers pay nearly half of all the taxes. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. We did. Now, God forbid, the rich leave.
Well, the rich are leaving tens of thousands a year in states like New York, New Jersey, and Illinois and California. And you see states like Texas, Tennessee, and Florida gaining population, and the Carolinas, as people go to tax havens and see that they get more bang for their buck. And I don't see this trend ending anytime soon, John McLaughlin.
No, and by the way, I'm like you, Sean. I'm still a New Yorker. You grew up in New York. I grew up in New York.
I don't have a choice. You know, my work keeps me tied to New York, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, my grandkids do. So my wife is like, she's not moving. But the thing is, it's not just Florida. It's like Matt's from Georgia. Georgia, I worked for Governor Deal down there. They had the lowest per capita taxes in the country, and Atlanta's booming, and Florida's economy is growing. And what Governor Cuomo, when he talks about, and by the way, yesterday there was a Siena poll out statewide, he was 46 approved, favorable, 48 unfavorable. And the New Yorkers, I don't know why they reelected him, but the amazing part is he was talking about, when he talks about millionaires leaving the state, that 1%, the most recent data is 2016 from the tax filings. So Trump wasn't even elected president, and they were flocking out of the state. And it's because of his high taxes. And you want to, I mean, Elizabeth Warren, you want to destroy the wealth of the United States? Put a wealth tax in. They'll go to other countries. It's unbelievable. The rich will always find a way to escape the taxes. And in the meantime, the people, they don't get it.
All right, so Ocasio-Cortez and a fairly large majority of Democrats, they want a 70% marginal tax rate, a 90% marginal tax rate for corporations. And on top of that, then they are offering everybody everything for free, but we're going to take away the lifeblood of our economy, which is oil and gas. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of high-paying career jobs for Americans on top of the job creation we have already experienced. And I'm looking at that. And then, of course, Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax. How is this going to play in 2020? That's the question. Matt Towery.
Well, I think John would probably agree. If you listen to the poll that you just mentioned a few minutes ago, basically, you have maybe one mainstream middle, not really middle of the road, but middle of the road compared to the rest of them, who has decent numbers, and that would be Joe Biden. Everyone else is to the left and moving greatly to the left.
Yeah, but Bernie's beating Joe in a lot of states.
Well, yeah, and then Bernie being another one. So my point being that when you add up all the candidates who are getting support, who are to way left to center, including Bernie, there's very little room for a moderate. And so my gut feeling right now, if I had to make a prediction, is the Democrats are going to go hard left. There's not going to be a center. There's not going to be some come to the middle. And even
so you even think crazy Uncle Joe is going to go further left?
I think he has to. If he doesn't do that, this is not going to be the scenario that we saw last time. This is going to be 2008, in which you had Hillary Clinton running and she didn't see Barack Obama coming.
Okay, but Crazy Joe has a lot of problems with the base.
Yes.
You can't go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. My state's a slave state. You know, here's Barack Obama. He's articulate and he's clean. Storybook, man. And add to that some issues that I know are coming out in his position, for example, on race issues and busing and segregation. I mean, these comments... You know, are going to devastate him.
That's why he can't win. I think one of these other candidates to the left of him are going to end up prevailing, and then you're going to have a very stark difference. You're going to have Donald Trump on one side, and you're going to have someone to the extreme left on the other. And it's going to be a repeat of McGovern-Nixon. It's going to be a repeat of Mondale-Carter. Admittedly, all brought into the future. I don't know what John thinks about that, but that's my gut is what I'm seeing right now.
John?
Yeah, I think we're looking at 1972 all over again.
Yeah,
McGovern.
Yeah.
I think the Democrat Party is going to fracture, and you will see a moderate Democrat leave the party and run. And that could be Howard Schultz right now, but you're going to have a three-way or four-way race where the president is going to be strengthened because his base is solid, but he's also improving. His numbers are moving up. I spoke to him a week ago Monday, and his numbers are grinding up because his State of the Union speech was great. The policy pronouncements that people heard was great. And the best line in his speech was that America would never be a socialist nation. And what's going on right now is the anti-Trump deranged Democrats are having this derby to see who's most deranged. And they're taking these policies that are maybe popular in a room full of socialists, but in mainstream America, in middle America, the idea of repealing the Trump tax cut, which would raise the income tax rates on 90% of Americans, cut the child tax credit in half from 2,000 to 1,000, cut the personal deductions down from 2,000 to 1,000, massive tax cuts on middle America, in contrast to an economy that's growing and an America that's stronger. I mean, the president is really, he just needs to keep moving ahead with his policies and showing that the majority of Americans agree with him, while the Democrats are going off on this. And it's not just economy. It's you know, abortion. It's
all right. So predictions. Who's going to be the Democratic nominee, and who's going to win the general? I'm putting you out on a ledge, Matt Towery.
If I had to guess right now, Harris will be the nominee. Trump wins the presidency. I said it last time, and I was right, Sean. You were kind enough to quote me on the air the day before the election when a lot
Correct.
Of folks didn't. John probably saw it coming. I saw it coming, but there weren't many others. I think Trump wins again, but I think he'll probably be running against Harris. That would be just my guess.
John.
Well, having worked for the president last time in the primary and the election, and getting ready to work for him in his reelection, he's going to get reelected because his policies are working.
Last question. What's going to happen in Israel? We got to look, we've had one guy on the world stage that has singularly been steadfast on the issue of moral clarity against radical Islamists, especially those in Iran that present a real clear present danger to the world. Prime Minister Netanyahu is up for re-election in about a month. Where are we going to end up there?
Well, as you know, I work for the prime minister, so I'll be going back over there. But as of what they did was they've investigated the guy for 3 years, harassed him on these nonsense
about cigars. Good grief.
Right. And they indicted him 5 weeks out for the election. This is a model of how they're trying to get rid of Donald Trump. So the left, it's an international left that's persecuting a successful right-of-center prime minister who's keeping Israel and the world safe, stood up to Iran, and he's running against a general who favored the Obama-Iran deal. I mean, could you imagine being an Israeli and saying it's great to give them $100 billion, of which they shot rockets, at Tel Aviv last week, that were Iranian rockets. Who do you think paid for that rockets?
Well, they've been fighting proxy wars, killing Americans, and threatening to wipe Israel off the map and America off the map for decades. And that was how foolish the Obama administration was when they dropped $150 billion in cash and other currency on their tarmac. All right, John, thank you. Matt, good to talk to you. Appreciate y'all being with us. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, let's get to our busy phones here as we say hi to Dan is in Michigan. Dan, the man, how are you? Glad you called, sir.
Thanks, Sean. You're doing terrific, as always. Beto O'Rourke, and you know how they say he's powerful because he almost beat Ted Cruz?
Yeah.
In 2016. Okay. But, Sean, what people are missing, and I hope you kind of bring this up in the future, is Ted Cruz in 2016 was a never-Trumper.
Right.
He harmed Trump in the primaries, 300 delegates down, refused to drop out. He kind of got more into his personal desires than for the party. And he went in the election with half the Republicans mad at him and not supportive of him because what he almost, caused us. Now, by the way, Sean, I know you.
Well, let me correct one thing. It was a hard fought battle and race, and Ted did eventually throw his support behind Trump. And I think Ted, he said it on this program not that long ago that he's been pleasantly surprised that Trump has kept his promises and governed as a conservative. And as a matter of fact, I can tell you from experience that I know that Senator Cruz and President Trump get along great. And, don't forget, the president went down to campaign for Senator Cruz because he had $100 million being thrown at him by, Beto Bozo. And that helped a lot in the race.
John. Okay, yep. Sean, by the way, you cut me before I was going to say, I've forgiven him. He's turned out great, backing Trump. You've forgiven him. I think he realized his own mistake. But my point is when he was running against Beto, he was the never-Trumper, and a lot of us Republicans weren't happy with him, and he only got 44% of the vote. And that was the big reason that Beto did so well, and the proof of that is the big Trump supporter, Greg Abbott, got 55% of the vote. Now, I love Ted Cruz now, don't get me wrong. But so Beto was against a weakened Ted Cruz. He's not that powerful, point.
You got to understand something. This is part of the political process. And when you start out with 17 guys and they all want one job and there's only going to be one left standing, usually what happens is a pretty big part of the 16 that lose are not particularly happy that they lost. But you know what? This is not beanball here. This is, this is a blood sport, to quote a phrase. And I think the president understood it. I think that Ted Cruz understood it. I think they both got hot towards each other at different times. And, now they're working together. And I think they support each other a lot more than you think.
And Sean, I 100% support Ted Cruz now, but you have to admit he was weak back then because of being a never Trumper, and that is why Beto did so well. I like Trump or Cruz now, but Beto did so well because he was. Ted was,
I think it was
Trump.
Just, look, it's a very difficult cycle, the president's first midterm. I've given you the numbers. I mean, in the case of Barack Obama, remember, his first midterm, he lost six senators and he lost 63 House seats. You know, Bill Clinton lost eight senators and 52 House seats. And Trump lost, I think, 39 of 40 House seats. And he picked up Senate seats. So, you know, historically, anyway, Trump did a lot better than previous presidents in the first midterm election. And I think a lot of it was because of the pure work ethic and force of Trump to get his voters to support some of these guys. Missouri was not an easy race. Indiana was not easy. Tennessee for a while looked like it was going to be much tougher. And the same, look how close Florida was, both for Ron DeSantis and for former Governor Rick Scott. Texas got a lot tougher than we would have liked. I think we could have won Arizona, but it worked out in the end. And I just think that, that's the nature of politics. You know, there are alliances and there are times that you're going to be against each other. I will tell you one thing. Anybody that I've ever watched run for president, and then when they lose, they seem to lose their mind. You know, starting with, well, Exhibit A, Al Gore. He's never been the same. He's lost his mind. And many others show signs of this syndrome, if you will. Look, it's very hard when you think you're going to win to lose. And some people also, I've met politicians, I've gone into districts before, you know, a vote is about to take place a few weeks out, and I'm looking at polls, and I'll say, well, you're 15 points down. And he goes, no, those polls are wrong. He goes, you should see the crowds. The crowds are not indicative of public sentiment. I tend to believe polls that are well done. I don't think in the day and age of Trump, I don't think Trump is a typical politician you can poll, because there are many people that are just going to say, I'm not telling you who I'm voting for. That's why I knew the exit polls on Election Day 2016 were not right. Hope that answers your question. Let's go back to our phones. As we say hi to Brian, is on the all-new AM 710 WOR in New York. How are you? What's going on?
Hey, Sean, how are you doing? As an ex-Long Islander to a Long Islander,
yeah.
I just wanted to say that, you know, we all know that who voted against Trump, the 14 senators, but Rand Paul's the only one that anybody really knows of. Why has any of Tucker, anybody, put their faces out there with their names? Because it's easy to vote no in the dark. And that's kind of like what they've done. And I'll tell you what, as a staunch Republican, I would love to see them up all the time and say, you know, remind people, these are the ones that voted against him. Don't let them get away with just voting in the dark. And Rand Paul's the only
Listen,
one that
Rand
spoke
Paul,
about it.
I know he did it out of principle, and I don't blame Rand Paul in this particular case. You know, at the end of the day, I'm looking at, okay, did the president win? They're not going to be able to override the veto. The president
right,
won.
Right.
The president's getting his money. And I know there might be some constitutional disagreements with it. I don't see one myself. I've gone over, you know, the legislation that allows the president to stop and intervene in drug trafficking
right.
corridors and build barriers and lighting, et cetera. And I'm But I would also argue that his role as commander in chief, when you have that many murders and that many sexual assaults
sure.
and that many violent assaults and that percentage of drugs crossing the borders, that, you know, he has a duty that he's sworn to uphold, and that is protecting the American people.
You know, as a staunch Republican, I'm almost embarrassed about some of our legislatures and how cowardly they are to stand up for what we believe. And
I'm not disagreeing with you. You're not hearing me praise the Republican Party in general.
Right.
If the Republicans would just align behind Trump and the agenda that they had openly supported for years,
absolutely,
they would be infinitely stronger as a party. But, you know, Trump goes to Washington. They had 65 show votes that they would repeal and replace Obamacare. But when push came to shove and it actually mattered.
Right.
Well, we found out we had about 100 in the House that didn't really mean it. And in the Senate, 2 years earlier in 2015, they had voted just to repeal Obamacare, and then seven Republicans that voted to repeal in 2015 wouldn't do it in 2017. It's very frustrating. You know, it's they're weak, they're timid, they lack vision, fight, backbone, and, you know, it's what we're dealing with. That's why I like the Freedom Caucus so much.
The one thing I would ask, I look at the Democrats and go, you know what? I wish we had the strength to stick together like they do. We would be unbeatable. But we're
so
not.
True.
And that's what a shame.
What a shame. Agreed. Totally. All right. 800-941-SEAN is our number. You want to be a part of the program. All right. Let's go to Jerry. Where are you, Jerry? I can't see. Where are you calling from?
Flagler Beach, Florida, just north of Daytona Beach.
What's going on, sir? I know you're living in paradise.
Sort of.
I don't take this the wrong way, but I hate you.
Yeah, those poor people in the Midwest are getting flooded. We got hit by Irma in 2017, so I feel their pain. But
no, I get it. I understand.
The border crisis is what I wanted to call about, and I have an advertising company, and you know, and getting people's minds, turned toward a particular issue is what I do for a living, and I cannot believe how inept conservatives and Republicans are at fighting any kind of an issue whatsoever. By not using emotion and using similes and whatnot to point out things. So in 9/11, how many people died on 9/11?
Almost 3,000.
How many people died of drug overdoses from drugs that came across our border last year? It was 20 times more. That's 20 times more families personally affected, 20 times more people who died. And look how much of our national treasure went to go over and go to Afghanistan, Iraq, and fight those people over there that killed 1/20 of as many people. And this is happening over and over, year after year. And there's no crisis? This is not a crisis?
Oh, come on. We got the cartels. We've got the gang members. 90% of heroin. Now the added burden of fentanyl, which is even a stronger drug killer than heroin. We're losing 300 people a week in this country. Add to that young girls are being human trafficking into prostitution for the rest of their lives. They're being destroyed. Add to that those criminal illegal immigrants, the 2% I talk about, not the 98% that just want a better life. And look at the number. Well, we had angel moms and dads on this program yesterday. How do you ever recover when you lose your 19-year-old son murdered by an illegal criminal alien that should have been deported, but some policy or some, you know, sanctuary city or state allowed that individual to go free? At what point do those people that don't enforce the law, do they bear culpability? Are they not held accountable for aiding and abetting in what happens by keeping such criminals in the country? I've never seen people have things so ass backwards and then screaming at the top of their lungs about child separation when we have child separation that is permanent. And the person that fixed the child separation issue happened to be this president.
Can I give you another example of
you can do whatever you want.
The absolute insanity. If you have a dog, Sean, and he gets out of the yard and he hurts a small child in the neighborhood, a judge could literally put you in jail and fine the living daylights out of you. You could spend much time in jail. But that very same judge can let a rapist, a drug dealer, a gang member out early and then harm more people in our community, and they're not held accountable. There's another example of the double standard that goes on because we have a ruling class in this country. And, you know, because we cannot hold them accountable is part of the reason why we're in the shape that we're in. You know, it's just flabbergasting me.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thanks so much, Jerry. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We got an awesome Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern. We'll tell you about that as we continue. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We will have the latest Where's the Mueller report, but more importantly, The deep state revealed. More information. We'll break it wide open. Also, we'll be talking about the abusively biased news media in this country now being revealed and people understanding it. And Donna Brazil makes her debut as a Fox contributor. 9 Eastern, Hannity Tonight, Fox News. We'll see you then back here tomorrow. Thanks for being with us.